So who are you?
I'm Kintan, and I'm a program manager in real-time collaboration services at Microsoft.
Real-time? Is that like Office Communicator? Or?
Office Communicator is one of our products. So that's a client, and I work on the server team. It's a live communication server.
Cool. So we met the client team. Yeah.
Yes, you met.
So you're the other side.
Yeah, we are the back end of all the sizzle and all the magic that happens. We make it happen.
Yeah. Now, Office Communicator is not... People on the outside world don't really know what it is unless they've watched the video, right?
Sure.
Because it's not something... It's not like Microsoft... Messenger that you can download and everybody in the world use, 200 million people in the world use that.
Correct, yeah.
You get this with how did you get Office Communicator again?
Office Communicator is basically an enterprise-focused product, and it's for corporate instant messaging.
Yeah.
And it does much more than instant messaging.
Oh, yeah.
But it usually, if you're working in a large corporation, it's very likely that you'll have Office Communicator.
Okay.
And it deals with secure instant messaging, secure conferencing, audio-video conferencing.
Yeah. How come we don't just make it available to everybody?
It is available to everybody who wants to purchase it.
Yeah, but it's the thing that a lot of people don't realize. It's IM, but it also hooks into your phone system and
Suddenly.
It hooks into your email
because
it shows out of Office.
Sure.
I'll link to the older video.
Yes.
Where he gave us a demo of the communicate. So what do? You're the back end guy then, right?
Yeah.
Keep the whole thing working.
Yeah, you make sure that it works, it scales properly,
yeah.
It's very easy for the administrators to manage. Those are some of the issues that I'm focusing on from a manageability and setup perspective. It's very easy to set up. Because a lot of these server products, when we look at, say, Office install is just one click, install a typical Office. Versus when you install servers, it's a whole totally different ball game.
Yeah,
so
you have to load it on the server before I can load it on the client,
yes,
right?
So your IT admin has to load it on the server for your client to.
And it sits next to Exchange. So does it install on the same boxes that you install Exchange on? Tell me a little bit about
the relation with Exchange is basically usually the same people who deal with Exchange are the same people who work with are the same people who are responsible for Office Communicator and Live Communication Server, the server product of it. The reason being the dependent components like Active Directory, which Exchange uses, plus the DNS, all the Windows Server goodies that are same and they are used both by Exchange and Live Server.
Right.
So that's the main reason. And it does not necessarily sit in the same box, the same machine as Exchange does, but it sits in the same environment.
That
would be the right thing to say.
Okay. And so this shipped, 6 months ago, a year?
That would be right, a little less than a year ago.
So you're working on a new version now?
You're working on a new version, and actually the server product has been out since 2003, in fact.
Okay.
And the demo that you saw last time with Andrew, the communicator demo, was about a little less than a year ago.
Got it. Can you tell us anything about what's coming?
Exciting stuff is coming.
You're such a PM.
No, Robert. So what'll be cool is it's extremely extensible, and we made it extensible.
What do you mean by that?
Developers will be able to write their own thin clients, or will be able to extend it to add their functionalities to it. Developers from various
verticals. Do you have any
examples
of that?
Oh yeah, we'll have some demos in there as to how the platform is.
Okay.
Maybe a sample app or so, to find out.
Cool.
So there are lots of exciting things coming on. I cannot speak onto the specifics, but things like conferencing, for example, we can do a lot of innovation in this whole real-time collaboration space.
Yeah.
Where we can add, we can empower people in such a way that the collaboration, no matter where they are located, no matter where they are present, they can make it very easy for other people that they want, they communicate or collaborate with, to easily find out where they are, whether or not they are available, whether they're online or not, offline. The whole presence, we're just gonna push presence all the way.
Okay.
And make sure that, because presence is extremely crucial in financial industry or healthcare verticals.
Why?
So, for example, in healthcare, you want to know if a doctor is present in the hospital or not. So, if the doctor is present, the nurse can directly, rather than beeping him or her, the nurse can directly, send a quick lab report on his or her PDA through Office Communicator.
Right.
for example.
Okay.
So lots of scenarios down there. And you want to know right now that I don't want somebody to just keep calling me if I'm in the middle of a presentation, right?
Yeah.
If I'm presenting. So they can easily find out what I'm doing, and then we can always extend it to specific scenarios.
Right. When are we going to really have presence? For instance, yesterday I flew back from Switzerland,
yes.
Right? And people could sort of track me because they could go to Flight Tracker,
yeah.
And I told them my flight numbers that I was going to be on, so they would know where in the world I am,
sure.
And they would know when I landed at an airport or not,
sure.
So they could start calling me and stuff.
Yeah.
But why couldn't Office Communicator do that automatically for me and tell the people I've let see where exactly in the world I am? You know, when are we going to have full-time GPS on everybody?
So there are certain, yeah, that's a very, very interesting scenario, and it's quite exciting as well. You know, there are certain aspects like location server, for example, right? That's
yeah.
based on GPS or location of the person, and that's highly used in the logistics industry.
Yeah.
Right?
Tracking
industry. Like.
Yeah.
So there's a potential to integrate Office Communicator or Live Communication Server with some logistics server based on GPS. How feasible is that scenario? I think the technology does exist,
yeah.
And the market need also exists. It's just going to take some entrepreneur to develop a solution, a third-party vendor to develop a solution, because we do support it.
Yeah. It's interesting. You know, when I first started using a tool called ICQ, which was a publicly available
sure.
one, you know, and that's really where I instant messaging really got kicked off. So it was... What was it? November 1st, 1996. It was released, right? And I remember the early days, everybody said, oh, you're never going to be using that in a business context,
sure.
You know? And now it's come full circle, hasn't it?
Oh, without a doubt. It's a whole vicious circle, right? And I firmly believe that, you know, the applications or the software that are succeeding in the enterprise space
yeah.
are very likely to succeed in the consumer space, and vice versa. So take Outlook, for example, or email.
Yeah.
Email started off in the enterprise space, in the universities first, and then came Hotmail, and then came Yahoo Mail or Gmail, right?
Yeah.
So there are certain apps that if they are good,
yeah.
they'll succeed both in enterprise world as well as the consumer world.
Yeah.
And the reason being, you know, I think all of us have sort of two avatars, you know, a personal avatar and a work avatar. And if we like something, if we are used to use some application in the personal avatar, it's very likely that we want to use the similar things in the enterprise or the
yeah.
work, the professional avatar.
Yeah.
And same with blogging, right? I mean, blogs started off as in a consumer space, you know, more
yeah.
like a personal diary or a journal. And with Naked Conversations, you've seen that
yeah.
It's completely transitioning. I mean, the impact is more and more visible in the enterprise space.
Yeah. Now, during this meeting, you scheduled me on Outlook, which connects to Exchange. So Exchange knows I'm in this meeting.
Yes.
And tell me a little bit about how Office Communicator changes once you're in a meeting.
Sure. So Office Communicator, Exchange basically uses the same supportability
yeah.
APIs that Live Server provides, Live
yeah.
Communication Server provides. And basically, it integrates with your Outlook calendar.
Yeah.
So as soon as your calendar has a time slot booked, it will just change your presence. So your presence is integrated with your Outlook.
Right.
In a way. And the way it does it is through supportability APIs.
Yeah.
Which we expose to the public as well. So basically, not only Exchange or Outlook or any just Microsoft application, but essentially a whole variety of applications can integrate with
yeah.
Office Communicator.
Now tell me what that lets me do. Can I change my phone so that every time it's in a meeting, it forwards to my cell phone?
Oh, certainly. You can set a rule. It's basically very low-end programming. I mean, there's no programming involved. You can just, we'll actually show a demo to you as well that
okay.
as soon as you're in a meeting, or you can have multiple forwarding setups. So at your home, when you are using the Office Communicator client from your home,
yeah.
you can have it forward to the cell phone. I mean, from your home phone or to the cell phone.
Right.
And when you are at work and you're traveling, you can have it forward to your cell phone
right.
as well.
Tell me a little bit about your personal history. What have you done here at Microsoft, and what's your background?
Certainly.
How did you get this job?
a brief history. I mean, I'm an entrepreneur, as you know. Basically, I graduated. I started a healthcare communication company in school.
Yeah.
And got back. I sold it when I graduated. I wanted to know, see how Microsoft works or how great organizations work. And I wanted to learn how things are done at a larger scale, so I came to Microsoft.
Yep.
I wanted to learn testing because that's something I wasn't exposed to at all in school.
Yeah.
And any testing that I had done was primarily very biased because I tested my own code.
Yeah.
So I really wanted to learn testing. So I joined Microsoft in test. And once I got a hold of it, once I felt comfortable that I knew testing to a certain threshold,
yeah.
I joined the RTC group, real-time collaboration group, as a program manager. Because I realized that at heart I'm an entrepreneur, and program management is the closest we can get to entrepreneurship within an organization, at least at Microsoft. That's my perspective.
Yeah.
So that's why I joined RTC. Another thing, why RTC and not some of the other groups? One of the main reasons was certainly an exciting space in the market. And more so, I wanted to focus on enterprise products because my personal experience had been in consumer space.
Yeah.
And I wanted to learn, you know, what are the nuggets to deal with that IT administrators when the purchase decision makers are not the users, end
yeah.
users, you know, how to create products for them. So that's how I landed up here.
So that's an interesting take up. How have you found that to be different from, you know, creating something where, you know, it's somebody who goes into Fry's and buys it versus
sure.
somebody who might be a CTO for, let's say, Boeing or Target
sure.
or a big company, you know, and is buying this and putting it on everybody's desktop.
Suddenly, yeah.
And forcing their users to
sure.
use it, you know.
So there are three or four.
Because I was forced to use it here, right? I didn't all of a sudden wake up one day and go, I want this office communicator on my desk. No, it just showed up.
But you love it, right?
Oh, I love it. Actually, I do.
See, there are various aspects, right? Various
yeah.
aspects to that, about three or four aspects. So we do have to get feedback from the end users who are, per se, forced to use it. But at the end of the day, we have to make sure that the total cost of ownership of this enterprise product is justified, is as low as possible within the competitive aspects. So we want to make sure that the CTO or the executive level management who are making these decisions know what the total cost of ownership is, know what the supportability story is going to be
uh-huh.
like. Plus the admins, you want to make sure that the admins love it, you know, the setup experience or the manageability experience. And that's where Microsoft's secret sauce comes in, because we have such a rich integration platform for the enterprise space. Active Directory, Windows Server 2003, other components like Mompack, for example, for
yeah.
manageability. Those are so rich that we can actually totally ruthlessly leverage those things and, you know, ease the life of administrators. So three aspects, the IT admins, purchase decision makers, and the end users.
Yeah.
And we constantly have to be aware or empathetic of those three consumer spaces.
That's interesting. So you have some pretty wild debates.
A lot of times, yeah.
Because when I'm in meetings with three different constituencies like
sure.
that, they all often don't agree, you know.
Without a doubt.
Like I'm an end user. I really don't care what the IT and the admin
I totally
is
agree.
Like, right?
I totally agree. And a lot of times, you know, when we write functional specifications for the features,
yeah.
we write, I include negative personas. So basically, negative persona is a person that we do not want to design for. Because there are certain features, you know, when I'm designing a feature for consumer, I include that negative persona, IT admin. We are not designing this feature for the IT admin. So you're constantly reminding the developer or myself, actually, and the tester to make sure that the persona for this is this and not the IT admin, or vice versa.
Right.
So some of the design concepts that we use for those things.
Wow. Sounds fun.
Yeah.
So what else
you
do we
check
need
out?
To know about?
Tell
me a little bit about the test. Since you're into the testing thing now, tell me how do you test out a product, particularly before it gets deployed?
Sure.
Because even before, like we just got it here at Microsoft, and we have what 60,000
yes.
something employees. Now, are all the employees now using Office Communicator?
A majority of them are, and the main reason was that we allow federation with some of the popular consumer IM clients, consumer instant messaging clients,
yeah.
MSN Messenger, you can chat with anyone from
AOL. My
AOL.
Brother's on AOL, so
yeah.
I can chat with him, and my son's on something else.
Yahoo
yeah.
Messenger,
Yahoo
AOL.
Messenger, yeah.
So you can do instant messaging on that within the constraints of your firewall. So that's,
yeah.
that's quite neat, because there are a lot of corporations that do not allow installing some third-party consumer applications,
yeah.
and can still federate to that. So that's that. Regarding the testing point, testing is a very... a very exciting field, because you get to develop this cynical vision of breaking the stuff, you know, breaking the code. But you're trying to be cynical, but with a positive attitude.
Yeah.
Or with a positive end goal in mind.
So
it's a very interesting mix of attitude that any tester has to develop. And the cool thing about that is that you ask that, you know, how can we test a product before it's really deployed?
Yeah.
So you start at, there are various aspects of testing. You know, start at the very core functional level, right?
Yeah.
So not everyone is testing the end-to-end scenarios. You start at the very core functional level. Say, does voice work, for example, right? So you just first test that. You try to integrate it with the adjacent features. So now if voice works, you're going to make sure how voice works with the UI. If I click this call button, does it really work or not? And then you try to, you know, start at the very focus point at the bullseye and then take a bottom-up approach.
Okay.
And then you, as and when you reach closer to RTM release, when the product is released, you test the end-to-end scenarios.
Got it.
But when you create your test plans, you have to start with the end scenarios first.
Right.
You cannot start that I'll just first test on this,
right,
on the core function. There are other aspects that you want to make sure that it's accessible by a variety of people in different language settings, different cultural settings. It's you want to make sure that it's the performance, the scalability is very well, the security is definitely one of the top priorities.
Yeah, on scalability, what I was wondering is how do you test something
uh-huh.
before it gets deployed to 60,000 desktops to make sure
we certainly
that it can deal with that kind of load, you know.
Sure. Capacity planning,
particularly
here
at Microsoft, we're very IAM, you know, we love IAM and passing huge files around and stuff like that.
So we certainly have for performance testing, we certainly have lab scenarios where we simulate the environment of actual corporation.
Right.
We also have we also engage into iterative feedback loops with the customers. We also have special engagements with customers where they also test it out in beta builds, or, you know, we have something called a TAP program, which is a technical adoption program, where we select a few customers, few large and small enterprises, and they test it out in their environment.
Got it.
We get both our feedback and their feedback.
Got it. You guys are pretty internet facing, right?
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about the security you guys had to do.
Security is a,
because if you opened up a hole
in the firewall,
it would be a huge problem, wouldn't it?
Sure.
So
security is certainly, you know, there are tons of aspects to security, right? There's an aspect of archiving, where, you know, make sure that the privacy of the messages is preserved, right?
Yeah.
A total new angle, rather than the networking angle.
Remind me about Wi-Fi later on. Keep going.
Sure. So there's that aspect
where
we want to make sure that the privacy aspect of the security, you know, security is a big umbrella and privacy is one of them, is maintained. We want to make sure that we are abiding all the compliance rules of various industries, from Sarbanes-Oxley to HIPAA and healthcare. So there's that aspect I won't go into the details of the protocols, but for the connectivity, we do use the secure protocols, so MTLS, the transport layer security. So that the network and connectivity issue is the secret sauce that we provide, right? I mean, rather than, why would an enterprise use MSN Messenger, for example, for their confidential IMs and use Office Communicator? So that's where the security comes in.
Right. Well, that's why there's security from the end user. I'm talking about security on your team. In terms of the code, how do you know there's not a buffer overrun or an exploit? Because you're facing toward the internet. You know,
so
you open up another place where a hacker could come in and hacker touches your code. You know, a lot of people here who work here, you know, they're working on stuff that hackers, the code can't even touch. But tell me a little bit about what the team, how has development changed for you, for your teams, in terms of thinking about security?
Sure. At Microsoft, we have this the whole culture of a secure development lifecycle, right? Where we make sure that all products that we ship are extremely secure.
Yeah.
And
that's a new new program, right?
It's upcoming.
In the last few years.
Very recently, in fact. So we go through a whole set of at program management, development, and test levels. We go through a whole set of processes per se to make sure that the code we write and the code we test is extremely secure. We have something called threat modeling, where we first take the data flow, the entire data flow of the core of the code, as to, you know, where the data is flowing. You know, what are the, we identify the assets of the whole system, as to, you know, which are the entry points where somebody can potentially come in or hack in, or which are the holes in the firewall if there are any, which ports we are opening, which ports we are not exposing, things like that. We take all those components, we go to a data flow diagram,
yep.
We follow a threat modeling exercise where we identify each and every threat. We make sure that each and every threat is addressed properly.
Do they teach this in school?
Not at all. I mean, the schools, at least the schools where I've been to, and not to get me wrong, that they taught me the basics of cryptography, for example, basics of security, you know, how RSA works. You know, when I graduated, I knew how RSA worked, for example, or how public PKI worked.
Yeah.
But I did not know the applications to that level. You know, I knew the details of Kerberos, but I did not know how Kerberos can be applied in this way, you know, how it can be applied to digital rights management, or how it can be applied to software development as a whole. So, and that was one of the main reasons, you know, when I joined Microsoft, you know, to learn all these things, how to apply, how to develop code that is secure, how to develop code that is scalable, how to develop code that is international.
Yeah.
And so security is certainly addressed and within all the teams, and I know for sure that in my team, you know, we certainly focus on security as one of the very top priorities. That's our secret sauce.
Yeah. And did you have Michael Howard or his team come over and train you?
Sure.
Because if you didn't learn it in school, how do you learn it here?
Sure. So there's this Writing Secure Code book, and there are tons of resources and videos online as well that we have access to.
Yeah.
Plus Michael Howard, and there's this whole initiative called Secure Windows Initiative, SWI.
Yeah.
That's coming up, where each team is assigned a SWI buddy, SWI buddy. So it's basically, you know, they make sure that we do our code reviews in a proper way, and all our threat models are done appropriately, and we have access to resources. We have access to expert security resources, where if there is some subject matter expert that we need to talk to, we can talk to them. We can find out if we are doing, if we can validate our approaches to make sure they are right or not. So Michael Howard is certainly very helpful. You know, we've been to his presentations and read his books. There are certainly other people in the SWI team as well.
Tell me about your development tools. What does your development team look like? What kind of tools do they use?
Sure.
Are you guys all coding C or C sharp?
Yeah, we primarily do C++.
C++.
And a lot of COM usage as well.
Okay.
Because it's the things we develop, they talk at the kernel level to a lot of extent.
Yeah.
So you need to use C++, and it is a security product. So there are certain, for the protocols and all, you know, there are two aspects to it. Not that we're not using C sharp.
Yeah.
There's a development aspect and there's a test aspect.
Yeah.
So for every C++ code that we write automation code that is usually in C sharp.
Okay.
Or which is usually managed.
Yeah.
To test that C++ code that is going to be shipped to the customers.
Right.
So there are two aspects, and we use all the standard tools that Microsoft developers and testers use. No particular tools in space, but there's one thing that's interesting that I want to point out is for the API platforms.
Yeah.
We have a Ajax web client for exposing it, like OWA.
Oh,
so
really?
You know, Outlook Web Access.
Yeah.
We now have Communicator Web Access.
Oh.
There's an exciting demo in the way after this conversation. So basically,
okay.
for CWA, we are going to expose that API, those APIs.
Yeah.
For Communicator Web Client, where and for those testers use their own, you know, pre-developed tools based on Ajax, where they can, you know, write down really quick, you know, write down a few. Few lines of code and test various cool stuff. You know, they can add context. They can customize the whole communicator client. They can customize functionalities, skins, whatnot.
Wow, that's cool.
That's really neat.
To go back to the Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
So I'm using this at Starbucks or in the airport, or and most non-technical people might not realize this,
sure.
But I do because I've been next to a hacker who's shown me what he's able to see as it passes
certainly.
Over the public wireless network, right?
Sure.
How do I know if I type something that some kid's not listening into my conversation?
Uh, some kids, if a kid is sitting right
and
next
not just
to you,
kids,
yeah,
right? There's professional people, right?
But, sure, any professional sitting right next to you, they can only view your skin. That's the only exposure they can get. On the wire, or if it's Wi-Fi, it's completely secure. And
so you're encrypting it, how is it encrypted?
It's not encrypted. It's basically it goes through TLS.
Okay.
Transport layer security.
Okay.
And there are certain algorithms to it which we cannot go into too much detail.
Yep.
And that makes it secure. And that's one of the main reasons why people use, why enterprises use Office Communicator as compared to one of the consumer clients that are available in the market.
So the consumer clients aren't guaranteed to be secure, right? If I'm typing into XYZ instant messaging client, and I'm talking to my friend at a Starbucks, if somebody's sitting next to me slurping off all the data, they can possibly see what's going on. Right?
Yeah, I cannot comment on the third-party consumer, I mean AOL Messenger or Yahoo Messenger, right? But or Amazon Messenger to that extent. But we can guarantee that Office Communicator is secure. Is secure in a way where not only your conversations, but any file transfer that you do, they're all going through a secure channel.
Interesting. Very cool. Do you want to show us the demo then?
Oh yeah, let's hop onto a conference room.
Okay, cool.
Thank you, Robert.
We're back. We walked downstairs
in a conference room to see some exciting stuff, and we have three exciting cool people with us. We have Vigas Sekaran.
Hi there.
He's a development lead, and we have Kyle Marsh. He's a software development engineer.
Hi there.
And we have Mallika Ranjan. She's a SDET lead in the client team.
Oh, wow.
So we have some exciting stuff. We'll start with Diga showing us Federation, where you can talk with employees of different organizations. Some cool stuff, how you can talk with your MSN buddies or Yahoo Messenger buddies.
Okay, cool.
Over to Diga.
So is this just like this IAM, right? So we have an IAM client. Does it work like Trillian? Tell me a little bit about, because Trillian lets me to talk across to different kinds of...
Well, it's not Trillian. Right, so this is Communicator, which talks to a live communication server.
Okay.
So for those of you folks who don't know what live communication server is, it's a corporate IAM and presence server, which enterprises can deploy in the corporation for secure IAM and presence. Right. So just imagine, like, why do people use Exchange? Why don't they use Hotmail or Yahoo for their corporate email? They don't, because they want to make sure the mails don't cross their corporate firewall, and they want to have control of the email. The same reason now IAM and presence are getting very organic. People use it for everything. They want to see who's online at what time. They want to communicate with people in their company. And and live communication server helps you to deploy a secure and IAM presence solution within your corporate boundary, right?
Yep.
So now this is within the boundary. Now we have, this is exactly like how we had like 15 years back, we had CC mail. You can send email to only people in your company. You will not be able to exchange email with anybody outside your company. And email then came SMTP, then we were able to exchange email with anybody from any company to any company, you know, any public cloud to enterprise cloud. So email became a standard.
Right.
What we have, what we made as part of Communicator, like when the first step towards connecting two IAM clouds, right? So we can deploy a live communication server in an enterprise, and you can talk, you know, can communicate IAM and presence with all the people within the enterprise. And say, you know, we want to communicate with somebody outside your company. Say Microsoft deploys live communication server. We have like all the 80,000 people in Microsoft, you know, exchanging IAM and presence.
Yeah.
Right? Now, if I have one more company, which is my partner, I want to communicate with them securely, right? So live communication allows you to do it with a feature called Federation, where the Federation feature allows you to set up a trusted link between two companies and exchange IAM and presence securely between them.
Okay.
Right?
The data still sits on a server inside your company. So if, if I'm working at Foo Corp and I buy live communication server and put Office Communicator on each of the clients, all my data is stored internally. It's not like when I go to Gmail or Gtalk or
it's all
Trillian
securely, and the enterprise has full control over the IAMs you exchange, over your presence data. It has full control over it. Enforces policies on you. It can actually can set policies saying you cannot talk to these and this. So it's a Federation feature. The first time ever, you know, you can set up your IAM cloud. You can have one more IAM cloud talks. This is a Federation feature, right?
Now this is really important because for instance, the pharmaceutical companies have very, very strict rules on data, on where data goes.
Exactly.
And
exactly,
so you have to have very strict rules about, or banking.
Yeah,
I
exactly.
was just in Switzerland, and the bankers there were telling me how strict their rules are. They're not even allowed to have USB ports open on the machines.
Totally. Yeah.
So
for example, banking
have very strict control.
Yeah. You hit it right on the head, right? Financial institutions, right? They have real time data. They want to know on real time using IAM to find out stock codes, and they want to exchange financial data, etc. They want a real time. IAM's email is slow. You know, they don't do business. So they want IAM, and they cannot use public IAM. They cannot use Hotmail or MSN Yahoo because it's not very secure. So if, for example, you take a financial company, FUBAR, they can set up their own corporate IAM. They can exchange IAM securely within themselves. Now they have a partner firm which also does financials, which is the customer or the supplier, and they can establish a trusted link between them and exchange securely. So that's what that's
right.
Basically.
But there, it's going out to. Couldn't it be like Yahoo or AOL?
Good point. Okay. So as part of this release, we also enable to talk securely, not securely. We also enable to communicate with public clouds. And right now we support 3 public clouds, Yahoo, MSN, and AOL, the 3 biggest public clouds. So if you install Live Communication Server in Enterprise, you can communicate securely with all these 3 big public clouds. Actually, imagine the first time ever you're actually indirectly merging 3 big public clouds, right? You know what I mean? Maybe 5-6 years down the line, you'll be able to exchange IAM and presence between AOL and MSN or MSN
right.
and Yahoo. MSN and Yahoo are already working on it. So just a note on it, it's all based on the innovation which we did in our group a year and a half back.
Okay.
So the first time we even made 2 IAM clouds communicate with each other using a standard protocol called SIP. So, which is, now we hear a lot of companies, I don't want to, we're going to open with public clouds and stuff like that. We did all the innovation a year and a half back. They're just too late. I'm not kidding. They're just too late. And, yeah.
But the problem is this isn't seen on the public outside, I have it on my desktop because we're Microsoft.
Yeah.
Or people who have bought Live Communication Server have it on their desktop.
Yeah.
But the average Joe.
See, that's
on the
why
street.
We need people like you to evangelize this better. Exactly. And I can show you a demo here. So
sure.
I have my corporate client. So this is my corporate client. This the 1.0 version I have. This is Federation here. I have in my buddy list.
Yeah.
A customer of mine. I work with Tel Labs is one of the TAP program because they are one of beta partners. So he's in my buddy list and we're exchanging.
He's on AOL.
Tel Labs. His URL is johnruss@tellabs.com, right?
Okay.
So now we have 3 other public cloud. This is, AOL, MSN, and Yahoo. So I actually am adding myself. I have my account in AOL. Myself, for the demo purpose, I added myself as part of my buddy list. So it's not Trillion. You're not signing in thrice. Actually, it's protocol. Our LCS servers in Microsoft talk to AOL servers in the AOL data center.
Yeah.
We actually communicate. It's like email exchanging between AOL and Hotmail. Actually, we talk a protocol between them to exchange.
Right.
So for example, I'm just trying to, I am from, so this is in my AOL account, you see I'm, there we go. You see AOL and LCS exchanging IAM here.
Yeah.
Or a trusted link.
And that's so, it's two separate clouds.
It's two separate clouds, exactly.
My son uses AOL, I talk to him, and my wife uses Yahoo, and I talk to her.
Exactly.
All through one.
Exactly.
Time.
So this is an excellent first step we did, right? Who knows, maybe, a couple of years, 5 years down the line, we'll have a standard-based IAM and presence for the whole world. And, check out the ubiquity, right? I can be in my cell phone, I can log into AOL, I can talk to anybody in any network. It doesn't matter. It'll be like email. I can send email to anybody in any company at this point.
Yeah.
IAM and presence is going to become like that. You can be part of any IAM and presence cloud.
There used to be, because I used to be a NetMeeting MVP, right?
Okay.
And there used to be, certain clients that would try to hook onto other clients, and they would survive for a couple of days or a couple of weeks until the other company said, I don't want those
hopefully losers. This one happens.
I don't want those losers from that other company coming on my service. So is this a standard that you'll be guaranteed that AOL won't shut it off next week or Yahoo won't shut it off?
No, this is this is a signed pact between AOL, MSN, and Yahoo are business partners with LCS.
Got it. So you guys signed legal agreements.
Exactly. So
you will not shut us off and
totally.
Play those little games that we used to play.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Partners.
Got it.
Partners.
Yeah.
So moving on, let's show some cool device integration with the communicator client, and Mallika will show us some cool controls.
All right. Let me get over there.
Hi, so one of the cool things in Communicator, not many people have used it or know about it, is call control. Where you can have your phone controlled by Communicator.
Yep.
So one of the things that really helps out there is if you're not in your office and you want your call forwarded to you.
Right.
Or even when you're in your office, knowing who's calling you without looking at your phone. Right now I'm not in my office. I mean, that's the phone that you integrate with, the one that's assigned.
Yeah, we got a demo of that when we saw Office Communicator. Back last year.
I think that's one of the coolest things you can do with it. I mean, besides the fact, that you can see who's coming, you can look at the title right there, and then you can forward it off to whichever phone number you want.
I oftentimes know a call's coming in and who it's coming in from before it even rings.
Yeah, so
because a little thing comes up on my screen. Yeah.
The toast.
You see a little toast. It helps a lot. Like right now, I'm in a meeting here, and somebody calls me. I'm like, okay, I've got to take that. I can forward it to my cell phone. I can forward it to the conference room phone here. I mean, that's one of the things that helps a lot. Besides that, the other thing is, the moment I'm leaving for home, I do that very often nowadays, where I set it off to my mobile.
Yep.
And as soon as I get home, I again switch on and set it off to my work or my home number, depending on exactly where I'm at that point.
I have a question there, because I've been using this feature a lot because I love the forwarding. But sometimes I don't, like right now, if somebody called me, my phone would ring, and I would say not accepted. Now, once it gets handed off, so if somebody calls in Microsoft's number, gets to my desk, and gets forwarded to my singular home cell phone, is there any way to pass him back to Microsoft and have him leave a voicemail for me in my... Yeah.
Not right now.
Yeah, that's a future request. That would be very hard to do. But,
Actually, then you set a forwarding on your cell phone to forward it to your Microsoft. Because we've done a handoff.
That's true.
We're not in a three-way call at the anymore.
Okay.
So now if on your cell phone you had set forwarding to forward all your calls off to your work phone, or you saw that person and you know, okay, they're going to call back in 5 minutes to leave a message, that's how they are.
Got it.
You could set up forwarding on your cell phone to do that.
Okay.
Because we hand it off at that point.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. You can really get that circular about how you set up your voicemails.
Yeah, there's a way to do that.
Cool.
So, for example, I'm going to call up my office phone from here,
okay.
From the conference room.
Oh, so we're, okay. Yeah, and there's the toast.
So you can see I've got a little toast coming. It shows me the phone number. It's a conference room, so it doesn't tell me the name. But
when my wife calls, it says Miriam.
Yeah, it does a reverse number lookup. Yeah.
Anybody you put into Outlook contacts.
So I have a choice to accept it. Now, the funny thing is it's picked up my office phone, so it's kind of useless accepting it because it's taken it off the hook, but there's not much more that I can do right here. So, but you can see I could hang up or forward the call on to somebody else.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. I could also add more people and make it a conference call. These are the cool features. There are a lot of things you can do with it. So if I was in my office right now, my phone would be off the speaker.
I haven't even used that. So I can, if I'm on my office number and I call you and I want to call in Kenton,
I can just conference
click
people
on the plus.
Click on my name,
And then it becomes like a little three-way conference call.
Ooh.
Right?
Okay.
Or I could go and...
See, this is why I do this video thing. I learn about how to use this stuff.
So the
you guys put too many features in your products, right?
Actually, from your buddy, you can select three buddies and say, right-click and say, create a conference. Actually, call all the three people...
At the same time.
At the same time, you pick up the phone, you're on the phone.
Oh, that's cool.
So that's the thing. And at the same time, if I talk to you and I decide, hey, the question that you've asked me, Kintan's much better to answer that.
Yeah.
I could transfer the call on to him. I'm off. You don't have to hang up. Call him. I could have just do that for you. So you could be in a conference call. So right now, it's my office phone, but I'm going to hang up right here.
Yeah.
And it tells me that the call ended and the call got disconnected from my office phone.
Yep, there we go.
So there we go. But at the same time, if I had the same thing going... So in the this place, I'm going to go ahead and forward this call.
Yep.
And I decided, okay, I'm going to forward it to home. In this case, actually, my home phone is...
His number.
I think I'm right there.
What are you doing with her home phone number? That's how rumors start.
I didn't bring my mobile phone with me, so that's what I mean. Yeah. See, so you hear the car right there, you know.
Yeah.
And I could have been holding the phone, I could have excused myself, gone out of the room, and I have my call.
Okay.
So you don't get to miss important call. The other thing is, if you actually close that toast and decided not to take the call, you get a missed call notification. You get a missed call notification that contains all the information, like you know, the person who called you, if they have reverse number lookup, you'll get their IAM and whatever information you've stored for them.
Okay.
And if your enterprise has put all that information in the Active Directory, you'll get it from there as well.
Now, let's say I was just in Switzerland, and I had my tablet PC. If I was over in Switzerland on Wi-Fi or whatever, connected up, and somebody called my number, can I send them straight into voicemail, or can I forward them to my cell phone?
You can forward it to your cell phone.
Okay.
That you can do. Sending it off to voicemail is like you'll have to hang up or not pick up the phone. I mean, we don't have this thing of sending to voice.
Right.
Mail straight away.
Yeah. So,
call forwarding.
Yeah.
So you set up call forwarding to, you know, deflect it to whatever you want.
Okay.
And
do I need to be signed? So let's say I'm over in Switzerland. I'm not on the VPN. I'm not on the corporate network. I'm sitting in a coffee shop or something like that. Does Office Communicator work just fine there too?
Yeah.
Yes.
So I don't need to be VPN'd in to use this.
No, that's one of the coolest things I like about it. I'm at home, I don't have to Razin VPN in, do anything, and I can IM with people, you know, all over the place.
That's really cool.
Yeah, and I can set off my... So the thing is also, right now I showed you how I deflected a call, but I could set it so that it permanently, while I'm in this meeting, set all my calls to my mobile phone. So
I do that
permanently
a lot of times.
Set. Yeah. The other thing is, if you had something playing, I don't know if you've seen that if you've got something playing in Windows Messenger, like a little song
or
a video,
or
anything. So you have the option, like I've got a little, like, you know, we had a little...
If you're watching Channel 9 videos.
Yeah, I'm watching Channel 9. I should have done one of them. So if I'm watching that, and say, for example, somebody called me. You see, my video is going on. Excuse me. That's a long one.
Yeah. You hitting the right number?
Yeah, just a second. I'm going to pause this for a second. I'm just going to make sure I've got absolutely the right number. There's some problem calling the number. No, I've got a test phone in the office that's connected to this.
Oh, okay.
So for some reason, either that PB stuff. But basically, when you get the toast,
My video is actually paused.
When you hang up the phone, it starts again.
Yeah.
And you can disable
it. It's really freaky because I almost go for the play button. And I remember, oh, wait a second, I just have to hang up the phone.
Yeah. So the thing is that you've got the option. If you don't like that feature, it's there in the options dialog where you can say, you can uncheck it.
Yeah.
So that it doesn't keep happening.
I actually like that option because you don't have to fumble around and looking for the pause button, you know, when somebody calls and shut off your audio.
Yeah.
You know.
So I think that's pretty convenient. I mean, you have the choice, but I like it pausing.
Very cool. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
Sure. So that was the client application. Let's talk about the CWA, which is very similar to Outlook Web Access. CWA stands for Communicator Web Access.
Ah, okay.
So if you come around here, I'll show you the demo.
All right.
So CWA is just school, completely Ajax-based in this Web 2.0 age. By the way, Ajax was one of, first deployment of Ajax was in Outlook Web Access.
Yep.
So CWA is definitely using all Ajax. So what you're looking at here is Communicator's client tool.
Yeah.
So
now, is this the Win32 version or is this the Ajax version?
This is the Win32 version.
Okay.
So I just want to show you first, and now I'll start the Ajax.
That's Ajax.
You see the Internet Explorer.
Yeah.
This exactly looks pretty similar.
What's different about it?
It's web-based. You can sign in from anywhere. You can just go to, what I do is just go to https://im.microsoft.com. And that's
just another feature I didn't know about.
Yeah.
This works on my account?
Yeah, totally. You can send from anywhere, any platform. You know, you have a Linux box, you want to sign in into Communicator. There we go. You have an Ajax-based web-based interface to sign in.
Damn.
And it's Ajax. So, little nice nuggets of Ajax, for example, it shows that I'm in a meeting, right?
Yeah.
But what if I want to say I'm in a meeting with Channel 9? See how cool it was? It's just click and point. You don't have to write clicks.
On my desk, it would say that.
On everybody's desk, right. On my personal note, I've just set my personal note right there in an asynchronous manner. Right? Rather than right-clicking, set personal note that we have to do on the client.
Yeah.
Other cool things, multiple people can sign on at the same time on the same machine. So,
okay.
For example, if you have MSN Messenger or Yahoo Messenger, you cannot have two people signed on MSN Messenger on the same machine.
Yeah.
Versus over here,
right.
So I'm signed on. And we also have Malika sign on.
Okay.
So both Malika and I are signed on this same machine on our corporate IAM.
Yep.
So for example, if we are both working on some presentation together somewhere and we just have access to one machine, we'll still be connected, we can still collaborate and communicate with the rest of the team.
That's cool.
And what's even cooler about Ajax is the development story, the APIs that we expose to our developers. And that's why we have Kyle.
Okay.
So Kyle, let's talk about the development story.
Excellent. Hi, Kyle.
So actually, I want to bring up a few things as far as the developer story for the RTC platform in general. The first step most developers want to look at is kind of mimicking what the Office folks did, which is driving contextual collaboration.
Right.
The deal here is, the simplest example I have is Outlook. When I'm reading this mail from Steve, I'm signed in as Dawn here, I'm interested in Steve's presence only as long as I'm reading this email. Once I move to another piece of email, say I go to a piece of email from Jay, I don't care about Steve anymore, I don't need him on my contact list, I really don't give a hoot. I only care about the people, so at this instant in time, my contact list, or if you want to call it a contact list, is the email message.
Right.
Right? So contextual collaboration. Applications know who I should be talking to, maybe better than I do.
So you're talking about here,
right.
And see that Jay's online.
When I switch the email message, now I see that Steve's online or not.
Yeah.
That is based on the context that I'm in that email message.
Got it.
So I don't care about contact lists. I care about, you know, it's contextual based. The context that I'm working in gets the right context in front of me. So that's a simple example. We see it all over, you know, in what we're doing. So the same sort of thing, for example, in a SharePoint page, when I go to a SharePoint web page, again, the members of the SharePoint or maybe who contributed a document to the library, I need to talk to those people at that instant. I don't know necessarily who those people are before I get to the page.
Yep.
So the systems, the applications that developers create often know more about who I need to communicate with than I do. Right?
Yep.
So driving contextual collaboration is a big thing. The good news is you can do it with very low cost as a developer. So a couple of things I'll show you here is, so for example, let me get rid of this. Here's a couple of little applications. First off, I have a little form I just created called Easy Presence.
So we're in Visual Studio.
This is just Visual Basic? Yes, okay. We jump back and forth. So I can set, the idea here, I can show the present states of Jay. If I want to start an instant message, I can just call into instant communicator automation interfaces, start a call, start an instant message. One of the things we can do that doesn't happen with our Office clients, the first step is using communicator or our clients' automation interfaces.
Yeah.
Right. So communicator exposes these automation interfaces. It is what Office uses. It's what SharePoint uses.
Okay.
So it's very fast to get going.
Use this to build a call center? Why would I want to write custom code that you guys haven't?
Well, this isn't custom code. So this is not writing a custom client.
Okay.
You can do that with a different part of our platform. This is, I just want to show contextual collaboration, show someone's presence, and launch an instant communication. And then I'll let the communicator guys figure out what instant communication means.
Okay.
Is that voice? Is that video? Is that I don't know what? Start a live meeting? I don't know. Whatever they're building into their client, that's fine. I just want to be able to show presence, a click or two, start a conversation. whatever that means, right?
Where do I find out what's available in the API? Do you guys have a developer center or something?
We have, there's a developer center on MSDN under Live Communication Server.
Okay.
There's a couple of places there that you can go to get the basics. So, for example, one of the things we have is we've encompassed this behavior into something we call the presence control. So here is a a little form. It's got a little control here, right? So that when I start this application, so this is just drag and drop out of the toolbox.
Yep.
And we'll build the other app. We'll go ahead and start this. When the app starts up, it'll go ahead and set the URI. It's just a property of this control now.
Yeah.
What the URI? That's the identifier we use to figure out who's running. And then once we set that, everything else just comes to life. The behavior here, that you get a little hover, you get a little right-click menu to start an instant message or a call or see their properties. This is all part of this little control. This little
gumdrop. You didn't have to write any code for that?
I didn't have to write any code. All I had to do was set a property of the URI property of that control. I can drag it onto a form and just go.
Wow.
That's just using the automation interfaces that are underneath Communicator.
Okay.
One quick thing I'll show you is you can actually go further than what the Office guys have done.
Does Communicator have to be on this machine?
In this case, Communicator would have to be on the machine, although Windows Messenger also works. The interfaces are the same.
Okay.
Right, so if depending upon which client they're using, they can do either one. The big thing there is most of our implementations, right, users are running one of our clients or else no one's ever present.
Yeah.
So using what's on the desktop to exploit that is really handy.
Right.
And it's the fastest thing, you don't have to write any UI. Okay. I'll show you some other things you can do as well. So this one thing that we can do here, I'll start a conversation with Jay. It probably won't work, but I'm just going to type in some gibberish here. Jay's actually a bot written on another part of our client, so here it's just echoing.
Yeah.
If you ask Jay stupid questions, you get, he's gone offline, you get stupid answers. But when I close this session, notice there's another dialog box that pops up with the contents of that session.
Yeah.
That's another one of the automation interfaces that you can use, which is, tell me when a conversation closes, I want to get the contents, I want to do something interesting with it. So you see an application that's got my context. Hey, I started this because I was on this web page.
Yeah.
Right? So I started it, I used the automation interfaces, I started the control. I get back at the end of it, hey, that conversation which started from your context has now ended. The conversation might be pertinent to the context.
Got it.
Perhaps it should go back to the SharePoint site or into an email thread or something because it was started as a part of your context. There may be some knowledge you should be getting back from it.
Got it.
Right? So it's another thing that you can do with these automation interfaces. So it's a very quick and easy way to get things into an application. One of the other things that Communicator added is the ability of shorting shortcuts. So here I'm just creating a new shortcut. I can just say, I could say SIP colon. Here I'll say SIP colon. We'll go after J again. So this is just a standard, shortcut creation.
Yep.
I'll create it. Let's call this J. I get a desktop shortcut, or I could put it into an email message or whatever, any place that supports the regular, like IM or email colon.
Yep.
So now when I double-click on it, up comes a conversation window with whoever it is I've just said.
Wow.
Right? So now everything else drives from there. If I want to go into voice, if I want to do telephony, video, live meetings, whatever makes sense, the user can pick. And all of that just comes along by simply embedding a link.
Could I do that to build a conference call so I could email off? But four of you.
We actually have a special link just for conference that you can use. So we actually have a link to do a conferencing provider. And then we also have automation interfaces that let you build and pick five or six names and add them. There's an automation interface, for example, start a conversation and then add a user. And you can keep adding users up to 32 with those automation interfaces.
Okay.
So those are the basics. I'll just point out a couple other little things. Obviously, driving Communicator is the fastest way to get contextual collaboration into your app, showing presence and instant communication. You want to write some kind of client functionality from scratch. For example, you'll see here that there's lots of people changing their presence status. I'm not really online with any of these folks. It's just a bot we wrote on top of our client APIs. You can write a complete client, a complete behavior, again, on top of our Windows behavior. So there's a couple other things. I'll give you a quick preview of what we are going to be releasing in March. You've seen the Communicator Web Access client. This is a client that's been written that uses our AJAX server. So we have a server that drives that, a web server obviously, that drives that AJAX client. Well, we've taken the APIs, if you will, or the AJAX service. We're still kind of struggling for a name here. It's
yep.
It's a web-based service, but it's not using traditional web services. So okay. It's not SOAP and WSDL and XML. Instead, it's JavaScript optimized for people writing AJAX applications.
Right.
Right. So we don't use XML, we use JSON. Because not all not all browsers can parse XML,
yep.
But anything who's got JavaScript can parse this JSON format, JavaScript object notation.
Got it.
So for example, I'm getting events back from those people who keep changing their status. Here's a contact event that comes back, and I can see that someone's updated their status, they're now online, I get their availability, I get their URI, and all the information that would come up to that. If I wanted to set my presence note in an application, I can set the note and set whatever text I want to set in the note. So this is, I'm building up a method here. The method is note. I'm setting up the context. I send that off. I get a quick response from the server as to, hey, is everything okay, just syntactically more or less. And then eventually I get the proper information back, including, since I'm on my own contact list, my own update of the note, which is up there now.
Wow.
Right? So I get these things back, back and forth with HTTP requests. So we need two because we're very, very asynchronous. We're not, yeah. Not normal, like most people think of asynchronous as it'll take a little while for this one command. Well, we get events from all over the place. Someone changes their presence status. Someone wants to invite you to a conversation. So we have we need two connections. One for you to tell us what you want us to do, change the note, start a conversation, whatever. And the other one just to send you all of the random data that shows up to an IM client, which is different than your normal kind of client yeah. experience, right?
Because people are changing all the time.
People are doing different things all the time, which is what's happening here. So
that's
we're going
to. So this is the code that comes through to your.
This is going to,
your CWA
yeah,
access.
This is a sample that we're going to distribute. We're going to create a little SDK for our AJAX service.
Okay.
From Communicator Web Access.
Are you guys coming?
And
to
this
the
will
next
be a sample.
Conference?
We're not coming to the Mixed conference.
Sure?
It was a little late.
But, we should sneak you in there because
yeah.
This is pretty cool.
it's very cool that this is the same thing our client. So anything you saw on that other client a minute ago, options, everything, you can build. It's just a question of how much UI you want to write.
Okay.
Right. So it fully functional. And again, we'll be out in March with the SDK and put the docs out on the net.
Very cool.
Perfect.
Very
thank
cool.
Thank you, Kyle.
Well, thanks.
That ends the demo, and
yeah.
I want to end on two quick plugs.
Yep.
One of them is we are here to revolutionize the way everyone communicates and collaborates. So there are two aspects of communication and collaboration, right? I think the phone as a hardware device, there's a lot that can be done with that. And the things that we have done with the computer, with the PC, with software, I think a lot more can be done to the phone as a device, because
yeah.
phone is at the end of the day a device, and software can add just sizzle to the phone. So we are working on a lot of cool stuff, and we are hiring. So if you're within Microsoft, go to http://rtcjobs.
Okay.
And if you're outside, just go to microsoft.com/careers, and please let us know. Another cool thing, if you want to follow all these cool developments that we are doing, please go to our blog. We'll be launching a blog on TechNet. That's
okay.
blogs.technet.com/rtc. It's the first post link if you want to focus.
Yay. Welcome to the RTC blog.
So that's about it. We are very excited, and thank you for coming. We're excited
cool
to be on Channel 9.
Well, thanks, and thanks for making our office lives easier, because it sure is a lot nicer since I got this.
Thank you, Robert.
For myself.
Sure, thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks
sure.
a lot.